Love your weekend breakfast
with Refilwe and Mbakanyane on 702.
Let's walk the talk.
So with that, we say good morning to Ms. Karabo Kholeng. Trust you well?
Good morning, Refilwe. I'm well. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Very well. I have little reason to complain. Let's talk about reincarnating Marachera, Notes on a Speculative Archive by Tinashe Mushakabanu and Petina Gapa's new play, Black Sunlight. That, of course, was a book by Dambuzo Marachera. Where to begin, Karabo? I'll let you lead the way.
So this book, Reincarnating Marachera, is, again, you know, people actually listen on Saturday mornings.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, why are you talking about it? Let's give you this book to read. And I thought that it is actually very important to round it up with another scholar's eye on Marachera, but a Zimbabwean scholar.
Yes, yeah.
You know, a Zimbabwean scholar who speaks the language, who has lived that reality, you know, because as much as we appreciate the work that the scholars have done in Europe, there's a particular kind of essentialism that takes place where he is colored in a particular way, because that's what the gaze does, right?
Sure.
Like how we look at things, we come with our own prejudices, with our own cognitive biases, you know, you and I can, like, we've got our class biases, like we all have that.
Mm-hmm.
So what's nice is when there is not just one person's view on the stories of Marachera and what Marachera means.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, because I'm also reading him as an outsider.
I was about to say exactly that. It's so key also to get that perspective of a fellow countryman or someone from home, because, of course, we can enjoy his work or love his work or celebrate his genius as much as we want. But that home perspective is also very, very key.
And the beginning of the book is such, right? So it's essays. It's very short. It's actually like almost a booklet, mm-hmm. but it's very instructive and it's beautifully written.
Okay,
you know, it's really beautifully written. And he opens with my first encounter with Mr. Marachera is at assembly at an out of the way rural boarding school.
Yeah,
I was 12. At this point, I did not know his story or reputations.
Mm-hmm.
His gender is fluid. For a while, he stayed a woman in my imagination. He is not a man.
Mm-hmm.
Androgynous. All the Dambuzos I knew were women named for all the disappointments in their families.
Mm.
We finally meet in the school library when I pick a copy of his book. He is staring back with his boyish looks, daring me. Little did I know, once I fell under the spell of this trickster figure, I would never fully recover. At the time, I knew nothing of the importance of Dambuzo's image as a factor of how people made sense of him. I was simply captivated by the mismatch between my ideas of him
mm-hmm.
and the man-child I had just met. So he goes on to speak about how his friend, this is Tinashe's friend, actually started, you know, he started reading Dambuzo and then he decided to bunk school. He'd bunk school and, like, go and drink with, like, the old people in the village. And then the figure of Dambuzo having come back and almost being like, you know that homeless guy who comes back, that guy who comes back from overseas and, instead of, like, choosing to, like, embrace the money and take the money that he can have, is disappointed and he decides that he's actually going to be with every man.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that he's going to join the poverty because he's actually revolted by the excess.
Mm-hmm,
right?
I get it.
And he's wearing that struggle and he's wearing the contradictions of himself, of the idea of this sort of pre-colonial kind of purity that nation-state leaders have about, like, you know, once independence is gained, nation-state leaders have this idea of, like, a pre-colonial perfection.
Mm, that never existed.
Right, when the men were chiefs, exactly.
Yeah.
But then they go on to sort of, you know, they go on to emulate the excesses of the colonial masters, which is what he was calling out.
Sure.
And he got banned.
Mm.
He got beaten up, you know, and it became a source of shame. And there was a Zimbabwean Writers Union. They tried to start it, right? And he couldn't be part of the union because the other writers were saying, you can't be speaking against the government.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like 4 years into the new government, you know?
Yeah.
And so he said, you know what, it's not a writers union because, it's about, like, telling me what to say and what not to say and to venerate our leaders. And I suppose, you know, I mean that's the figure as he is described in Mushakabanu's book.
Yeah.
You know, and so he breaks down sort of the story, and then he also He also looks at, he picked up some typed, you know, pieces of, you know, some of his poems that were incomplete. And he also went on a pilgrimage to his grave. And the description of that is also something else, because he speaks about how the grave diggers at the cemetery, so he's buried at the cemetery that is not like the Hero's Acres. So it's like everyday civil servants.
Yeah.
And it's just got a plaque, his name, his surname, date of birth, date of death, right? And there's no death certificate that really confirms what he died of.
Mm, yeah. Any so reasoning for that?
It could have been HIV. It could have been. There's no conclusive information about the cause of death.
Mm-hmm.
But then at this grave, people visit from all over the world. People actually do pilgrimages to Damodar Mahathera's grave, and then the grave diggers don't know the importance of this man. They just know that, yo, this grave, like, they have to keep it pristine, because people are visiting from all over the place, and then, you know, they leave, like, you know, blessings, and they, like, go.
Mm-hmm.
But these kids, like, are growing up not knowing that the grave that they're tending to is because his book is not available, his writing is not available. The description of their pain and their suffering right now, he wrote it, but it's not available to them.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And what occurs to me is that even this author himself didn't say to the grave diggers, "Do you know who this guy is?"
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I just found that interesting. Like the way that we take our legacy for granted, and we take it as a given, you know?
So, Karabo, I mean, that's interesting, and maybe that's something that we can, you know, just pause on for a moment. In many ways, it's kind of the sort of panic that we're consumed by right now, which is the passing of elderly people or older people or stalwarts or people that, you know, played a significant part or some kind of part either in our struggle or our history. And that's only speaking to the people that we do know, but even everyday South Africans with knowledge of, you know, what happened in the struggle or in the transition to democracy. So there's this panic around losing those stories, but the fact that, you know, they themselves never took the time to talk about it is quite an interesting one, where only certain stories or certain narratives were pushed publicly, because to talk about the pain of being in the struggle or to talk about betrayal within the struggle and so many other things are seen as counter-revolutionary, you know. So the same way he doesn't speak to those grave diggers and those groundsmen and tell them who it is, whose grave it is that they're tending to, is almost what's happened here at home, where not enough stories have been told and not enough diversity in the telling has happened.
And you know where the danger lies, Lucille, is that we start to rewrite history in ways that are even further and further away from the truth, right?
Mm.
Where, you know, where people are starting to call Mandela names.
Mm.
It's like, guys, can the man rest in peace? Let's fix our country now. Like, you know what I mean? And
absolutely.
And those of us who are alive and those of us with the memory start writing it down and then speak to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, because we have to be so mindful that history is not over. We're still part of it.
Of course.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have to keep reading. That's why we have to keep writing. We have to keep questioning. And we have to, you know, as we look to the past, we must also sort of, you know, sit and think about the fact that we're living in a future that we couldn't imagine. Right?
Sure.
We had dreams about it, but now we're sitting in it and it's a mess. But also, our mess is not unique, and that's why people must read, because
sure,
our whole world is a mess, you know. And reading helps you understand that, so you don't catastrophize or exceptionalize your pain, but you look at it, you know, you look at it with circumspection, and you look to people who have written, the people who have come before, and you must read what the younger people are writing as well. And I think that's what's important. You know, I think during all this noise, and you and I, we are the noise makers, right? We are on the microphone. But you know, I have to remind people to also sit down when they're done and just sit quietly and read. Switch off everything. Just pick up a book and read and then think about where you are, you know? Because we need to pause now more than ever.
Mm, and gain some perspective.
Yeah.
And strategize for a way forward. Absolutely.
Yep.
So we move on. Should we move on, actually? But I want to say we move on to Bettina. I'm looking at the time. Bettina Gupta's adaptation of Maracera's book, Black Sunlight. And this is now for the stage, her new play. Let's talk about this.
Well, Bettina Gupta is an amazing Zimbabwean.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she went all the way to The Hague. And she's written books and she had to come back to Zimbabwe and fix things, you know?
If only it were that simple. I'm coming back home, I'm fixing everything.
Yeah, with my Hague credentials. And she decided, you know what, let's start with the library.
Mm.
Yeah, the National Library.
Yeah.
And let's start to find ways to put the stories out again.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't live in the European Academy, because that's what happens with our stories. If we don't take care of our stories, they end up in the European Academy, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then our kids don't get to read them. So she decided to adapt the play with the Family's Trust permission, and it opens beautifully. If you want to read it, it's on the Johannesburg Review of Books website.
Lovely resource.
Yes, they've published the opening act, the opening act to the play,
mm-hmm.
which is just brilliant. I mean, she sets the stage, and reading plays is something that we don't pay much attention to. When last did you read a play?
Can I be honest and say I have not read a play since second year English Lit. I do not go out of my way to read plays.
Well, this is a good opportunity to actually start reading plays again. And mm-hmm. and the opening act is brilliant. She writes it simply, but she brings so much action into just the scene as you read it. And it, just thinking about adaptation and adapting somebody's story that was written years ago and making it feel current today in 2020, you know, and it's also a person with a contested legacy and contested histories, right?
Yeah.
And as a black woman, adapting a black man's literary work for the stage, which is also it's a contestation, right? Because as a black family, men and women, we fight over who gets to tell the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she does it brilliantly, you know. So kudos to her, and I hope it comes to South Africa at some point. Hello.
Tell me, Karabo, how do you think she resolves or deals with that contestation? And what do you think a woman and a black woman adapting a black man's writing for the stage, what does it bring to the play?
Well, I mean, it brings a different touch, but, you know, she's also a critical reader, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's also very critical of Maracera's work. You know, she says that, you know, he's unfinished. She says that, you know, he gets too much credit for his literary abilities because he was an undisciplined writer. That's, I'm quoting her. Right?
Oh, that stings me.
Yes. So she's a critical reader of Maracera, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, she doesn't kind of desecrate his memory, but she does it justice. And I think that's, you know, what black women do when they bring the story to the table, that they just do the work of telling the story from their perspective.
Sure.
You know, they're not saying that the man's perspective is wrong or incorrect or invalid, but it's like, try and read it from this side. And the thing is, the irony is that Dambutso is a name that's usually given to girls, right? And even the contestation around, you know, around his gender sexuality, right, is something that especially black men who kind of defend his work try and do it in a very sort of cis hetero patriarchal way to say, no, he's one of the big men, you know, and he never called himself a big man, you know. So I think it's important that a woman gets to also kind of create the problem, because, you know, Dambutso is a problem, and the problem is us, you know. And I think she's doing a wonderful work, you know, wonderful job of doing it. I only read the first act. I don't have access to the full play,
sure.
But, you know, I'll talk to the people.
All right, fantastic. And, you know, just, I guess, on that note, the idea of him being either an ill-disciplined writer or even an unfinished, you know, his work being unfinished is quite an interesting one. And it kind of reminds me of how we viewed and consumed struggle-era poetry, or even the poetry of the times, you know, when to say something like, "Black is beautiful," was just revolutionary, right, to articulate those words. But obviously, as time goes on, we need, we still need those phrases, but you do need more than that from the artist as they grow and as they develop. Should that just not be enough that he served his purpose during his time? Oh, Karabo, you're muffled all of a sudden. Maybe you can just move your mouthpiece.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you now, yeah.
Sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah.
He wrote. The thing is, he wrote. We didn't write. We're talking about it, but he wrote. The writers have done their jobs, you know? And I think what's important is that we keep reading, and then we read again. And hopefully, you know, more people write. I think, you know, he was a man of... He was beyond being a man of his time. He was a man... outside of his time, he was a man beyond his time, you know? He was beyond his body, he was beyond his identity, he was beyond his tribal affiliations, he was beyond his class, you know? And I suppose that's why we appreciate him, because, I mean, that's the mark of a true artist, somebody who's able to live in society but be completely otherworldly at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. He certainly did leave his mark. So, Karabo, I'm glad we finally did this Dambudzo Marachera talk, retrospective series. What do we call it?
Festival.
It was a festival. It was a fete. Absolutely. Really, really glad and happy that you indulged us and we got to do this. What I'm keen to find out is what has been on your bedside table and who's made an impression on you lately?
Reading wise,
yeah.
Whew, it's taken me some time, but I finally picked up Rehana Russo's New Times. I'm a big fan of her writing.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at that. I'm also looking at Takalani M's Into the Sun, the romance, because I need some romance in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, girl.
And then there's a podcast called 99% Invisible. It's all about architecture and design and the stories behind the things that we overlook about our lives, like why the door handle opens the way it does and why the lift is made by whoever it's made by, how water fountains became public, right?
Sure.
It's by Roman Mars, who's an architect in California in the US. And book came out.
Yeah. All right.
He did a whole book, 99% Invisible City. So he's looking at cities and how the things that we take for granted for every day actually have so much richness and history that, you know, we need to pay attention to. And that's what I'm very, very excited with that one. It's nice because, you know, it's got short paragraphs and beautiful pictures. So
and something so key. Something so key for us to consider, just, you know, if not against the backdrop of our situation in general in COVID-19, but against the backdrop of, you know, the degradation and breaking down of Transnet and the destruction of Transnet's infrastructure, right? As we look at that mess, and it's so important and it's so true that you don't pay attention or you take infrastructure and design and architecture so for granted until it stops working for you. And then, and then you miss it and then you cry about it.
You know, Rufila, my scholarship is on migration in Johannesburg, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm writing on right now.
Sure.
And I've been learning a lot about how the people that, you know, the language of containment, the language of disease, and the language of slums and megacities, right, is about how governance, how the state is absent from the poorest people in cities, but it's the poorest people in cities who have to actually make use of the dead spaces, the left behind spaces, you know, and turn them into something that makes their lives worthwhile because they're going to wait forever. You know, so even the way that we relate with cities and time and our life stages and the anxieties that come with that and how that is also classed, you know, it depends on the body that you live in. It depends on your skin color. It depends on the politics of the time. It depends on the global politics as well. Is that, you know, yeah, I'm starting to think about cities in a completely different way.
Absolutely.
You know, and I'll be very happy to share it with you after I pass.
Listen, we're going to look forward to reading that paper, but also looking forward to a chat down the line about 99% Invisible. So really appreciate your time. Karabo, let's chat next week.
All right, Rufile. Take care.
I will do. You too. Fantastic stuff. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Keep those emails rolling in, rufile@702.co.za. We sure would like to hear from you. And any thoughts or suggestions going forward, by all means, please do drop us a line.